Aftermath by Peter Robinson. Read by Neil Pearson. They locked her in the cage when she started to bleed. Tom was already there. He'd been there for 3 days and had stopped crying now. He was still shivering, though. It was February. There was no heat in the cellar, and both of them were naked. There would be no food either, she knew, not for a long time. And the smell was terrible. They didn't have a toilet, only the bucket in the corner. But worse even than the smell were the little scratching sounds, the tickle of sharp little feet across her legs. She could tell in the dark by the way they moved whether they were rats or mice. Rats were the worst. Once one had bitten her. It wasn't the first time she'd been locked in the cage, but this time was different. Before, it had been because she'd done something wrong. This time it was because of what she had become, and she was really scared. She began to shiver. She hated the cage, more than the blows, more than the humiliations. But she wouldn't cry. She never cried. She didn't know how. She held Tom and tried to comfort him, making them both a little warmer. She could hear music from upstairs, loud, with the bass making the bars of the cage rattle. Then she thought she heard a car pull up outside. Voices. Another car. And suddenly, all hell broke loose. Someone was battering at the door. Then came a crunching sound. She heard shouting and feet running around upstairs. She heard someone prise open the lock to the cellar door. Then came the lances of bright torchlight coming closer, so she had to shield her eyes with her hand. Then a strange voice cried, "Oh my God!" Maggie Forrest wasn't sleeping well, so it didn't surprise her when the voices woke her shortly before 4 o'clock one morning in early May. If it hadn't been the voices, it would have been something else. A car door slamming as someone set off for an early shift. The first train rattling across the bridge. The neighbour's dog. Or a nightmare. She was too jumpy these days, she told herself. But there they were again. Voices. One loud and masculine. Maggie got out of bed, padded over to the window, and looked across the street called the Hill. There was a hall light on directly opposite, in Lucy's house, and she heard the voice again. It was Terry's voice, and he was shouting. Then she heard a scream, the sound of glass breaking, and a thud. Lucy. With trembling hands, Maggie picked up the bedside telephone and dialed 999. Probationary Police Constable Janet Taylor stood by her patrol car and watched the silver BMW burn. Even standing upwind of the foul-smelling smoke, she could smell the burning rubber and plastic. It was giving her a headache, and she knew her uniform would reek of it for days. Her partner, PC Dennis Morrissey, stood beside her. One or two spectators were peeping from their bedroom windows, but nobody else seemed very interested. Burning cars weren't exactly a novelty on this estate. The leading firefighter, Gary Cullen, walked over. "Everything's safe," said Dennis. "Under control, what do you think?" "Joyriders. We checked the plate, stolen from Manchester earlier this..." "Control to 354. Come in, please. 354, over." "I'll get it." Janet picked up the radio. 354 to control, over." "Domestic dispute reported at number 35 The Hill. Repeat, 35 The Hill. Can you respond? Over." Christ, a bloody domestic. No copper liked domestics, especially at this time in the morning. "Will do," Janet sighed, looking at her watch. "ETA, 3 minutes. 35 The Hill was a small detached red brick residence between a plot of allotments and a row of shops. It wasn't much bigger than a cottage, with a low-walled, overgrown garden and a modern garage attached. "There's a light on in the hall,"